renewed by a new court proceeding every 180 days. We felt that because of the much more rapidly changing nature of most communicable diseases, that a 60-day order was more appropriate, because there just don't seem to be the same sort of arguments for very long-term commitment for any communicable disease as there might be in the case of a mental disease. But I think the civil commitment procedure, despite its complexity, is geared towards a rather rapidly changing situation. As a person's mental state can be changing quite rapidly, and it can be important to get them into a state hospital rather rapidly. And so even though the procedures are admittedly very cumbersome, they also take place rather rapidly.
Okay, but my question, let me ask it another way then. From what you're saying, that this person who has tuberculosis, we want to get them out of the public context, it would take no longer than 6 days. Is that the assurance that you're giving me?
I'm afraid I don't have all the deadlines in mind. I mean, it's after 72 hours, there has to be court process initiated. Yeah, well, I'd actually rather have Len Perlman, the Health Division's attorney, respond to those things, because he's probably got the procedure more firmly fixed in my mind, and I'd be afraid of making a mistake if I answered your question.
Mm-hmm. Is Mr. Perlman out there? Oh, there you
are. Well, members of the committee, the bill provides for a 3-day scheduling of a hearing with an opportunity for an extension of 3 more days, but the hearing must be commenced within 3 days of the filing of the petition. Under the emergency procedure under section, I believe it's 11 of the bill, the person can be taken into custody immediately. The health official is required to appear immediately before a court and have a summary order taken in order to hold the individual, and then the procedure for the 3-day the petition and the 3-day hearing comes about. But I'm not familiar myself with the mental statutes on the proceedings under the mental statutes, other than just reading those statutes. But just reading the statute, it appears as though the hearing could take place within 3 days and an order entered.
Okay, so what you're saying is within 3, maximum 6 days, we have this person out of, if necessary.
That is correct, according to the statutes.
Other questions for the kid?
Yes.
Representative Pickard.
This may be a little bit off to the side, but you alluded to it, and maybe you need to help me with what I think you said. Did you say, in fact, that under current statute, there was some question in your mind whether or not AIDS qualified as a venereal disease?
That's correct.
Okay. Could you just, while you're here, help me with that?
Sure. I'm referring now to the existing definition of venereal disease, which is in ORS 434.005(3). And I'll just read it. It says, venereal disease includes, whatever that means, syphilis, gonorrhea, chancroid, lymphogranuloma venereum, granuloma inguinale, and any other disease commonly transmitted by sexual contact, which the division by rule designates as dangerous to the public health. Now, I don't have any doubt whatsoever that AIDS is a disease commonly transmitted by sexual contact, but it's not clear to me that the division has by rule designated it as being a venereal disease. Now, we could argue this one way or the other, but the point is that there is at least some doubt right now as to whether AIDS falls within this very specific definition of venereal disease. It could be declared by rule to be a venereal disease, but I don't believe it's correct to say that the Health Division has done it to date.
Thank you.
Other questions? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll close the hearing on House Bill 2067. And open the hearing on House Bill 2354. Ed Patterson? Where did Ed go? Oh, there you are, Ed.
Waiting patiently, Mr. Chairman.
As long as you're not having an emergency.
No emergency. Mr. Chairman, my name is Ed Patterson. I'm representing the Legan Association of Hospitals to comment on House Bill 2354. The association has not taken a position in opposition to House Bill 2354, but I would like to at least make the committee aware of some of the questions that the bill does bring forth, and I think there should be some caution exercised on the part of the committee before passage. Essentially, the bill requires that every hospital emergency room will see any patient that needs emergency care. As a practical matter, that is the current practice of every hospital in the state now, and there have been no denials of emergency treatment of any patient presenting themselves to the emergency room. I was looking forward to hearing the proponents of the bill, and this is the second committee meeting the committee has had regarding this with this bill on the agenda, and I have yet to hear a proponent. So I guess essentially what I'm saying is we don't really think there's a need for the bill. And if there is, there should be some serious consideration given to amendments. Virtually, emergency care in a hospital emergency room is included in the mission statement of every hospital in the state. And I seriously doubt that, particularly for the reasons alluded to in House Bill 2354, that even in the future there will be a denial of any person presenting themselves with a true emergency. There are a couple of problems that I see with the bill. And I want to make the committee aware that in Section 1, Sub 1, it indicates that no officer or employee of a hospital licensed by the Health Division may deny a person diagnosed by a physician on the staff. I seriously question that that is the proper language, and perhaps serious consideration to be given to an admitting physician on the staff or a treating physician in the emergency room, because there are a number of different types of physicians on hospital staffs, including psychiatrists and podiatrists, and on some occasions allied health staff such as optometrists and certainly ophthalmologists. There are a number of different types of doctors that are admitted to practice on staffs. They may not be in a specialty that has a high level of training regarding identification of an emergent type patient. So just because a physician happens to be a member of the hospital medical staff doesn't necessarily mean that that patient may meet the qualification as outlined in the bill.
Let me ask Ed first. What language, you know, you had several suggestions there. What language would, you know, you understand the intent.
Yes.
What language would meet that intent?
I would suggest deleting the word a physician on the staff and perhaps changing that to the admitting physician, if that's the intent of the proponents.
A question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ford.
Well, it doesn't make sense to me at all, because I've been to an emergency hospital often enough to know you don't get to a physician on the staff for a diagnosis. You don't even get in the door unless you've established the ability to pay. If you're ambulatory. I don't understand the wording either, because to me, you're already there. And I've never heard of a case where you are unconscious, you go in, and you're diagnosed, but you're not treated. I don't understand, I guess, where it's coming from.
What?
Am I misinterpreting?
Run your question back again. I'm not sure I understood it, Representative.
Well, if you're conscious and you go into an emergency room,
mm-hmm.
I know people who have been turned away because they don't have the ability to pay. But that has nothing to do, they haven't even seen anyone to be diagnosed yet. They don't get past the staff at the front desk. If they are, in fact, unconscious, or they're the emergency is such serious that they're taken right in. I've never heard of a case taken in who wasn't immediately treated. So I guess I don't understand what this means.
All right, so what you're saying, Representative Ford, is that we better not have diagnosed by a physician of the staff or by the admitting physician or any of that kind of language, because most folks get turned away before they see the physician. Is that...
Well, if the intent of the bill... if the intent is that no one can be turned away from a hospital with emergency room when seeking emergency treatment, then this language sure doesn't make sense. But I'm not sure what the intent of the bill is without having a proposal.
Well, Representative French first.
Yes, sir. Ed, do the hospitals turn away people who come to the emergency room when in fact it is not a true emergency?
I'd be hard-pressed to say that hospitals do not turn away non-emergent patients, but I am confident when I say that no emergent patient is turned away, and that appears to be the intent of this bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm aware of a situation in a hospital in Eastern Oregon, and I'm aware of it because a relative of mine happened to work in the emergency room. She happened to be a nurse there, and she said she was amazed and somewhat upset for the fact that certain people in that community were coming to the emergency room for one of two reasons. They didn't want to be barred of going to the doctor when they should have gone, that is during regular hours, or that they did not have the funds to pay for the treatment they were seeking, neither one of which was an emergency treatment. They were simply using the emergency room as their ordinary medical facility. And she didn't think that the hospital was turning any of these away, and certainly didn't think they were turning enough of them away if they ever turned anybody away.
Representative French, I think that practice has been historically very widespread for patient convenience and whatever other motivation, and perhaps in some cases for doctor convenience, the patient would present at the emergency room. And it has been a long-standing practice in health insurance carriers some years ago and up until recently to pay for those emergency room treatments, be they emergency or non-emergent. And so the insurance companies themselves contributed to that, to a motivation to do that. But there has been a growing awareness, particularly in the last 5 years, on the part of third-party payers to recognize and that there is has been an over-utilization of emergency room. So there has been a concerted effort on the part of third-party payers to recognize that just because the patient's true emergency room doesn't mean they should be covered unless it's a true emergency, number one. And number two, I think there has been a growing awareness among hospitals and hospital governing boards to develop policies that part of their cost containment practices should be to deny treatment in emergency rooms for non-emergent type patient care. So I think that, although I recognize the problem, I think that has been changing over the last 3 years.
Thank you. Representative Bigelow.
Ed, maybe you might respond to an amendment to this bill that would say something to the effect that anybody presenting themselves at an emergency room shall be seen by a doctor immediately to determine whether or not there is an emergency. I brought my wife to a hospital once when the woman was in great pain, hyperventilating, passing out, got her out of my car into a wheelchair, brought her into the emergency room, and that idiot there wasn't going to have her seen even by a nurse until she had all the details on my insurance. Now, I was ready to kill someone. That woman needed immediate attention. You could look at her and tell that she was suffering. As a matter of fact, she was having a life-threatening emergency. Now, of course, you know, your good friend and mine had a lengthy conversation about it later on. But I think maybe that's the guts of what we're really talking about here. Nobody wants people treated who don't need to be treated, who are going to use the emergency room as a medical facility, and on and on and on. But it seems to me that someone ought to immediately take a quick look at this person and say, yes, that's an emergency, take them right in, we'll talk about insurance later. Or, no, my friend, you better go see your family doctor or go someplace else, because this is an emergency room and you don't have an emergency. So I think maybe that's really the problem it's trying to get at. And whether it's a question of bad management in some cases or poor instruction or inadequate person, I don't know, but I got a hunch that that's what this is really after, something like that.
Representative Ford? Did you have a question?
I already gave my questions. I really need to know what the intent is. If Bernie's right, then this, we need to ask a lot different language than what is here.
Well, I am not the drafter of the bill, and I have not talked to anyone about the bill. However, it is my assumption from reading the bill that the problem addressed is a problem of people who are unable to pay for medical services, having a life-threatening situation, going to the emergency room and being turned away. Now, I don't know when it was put on your desk.
I do have a question, Mr.
No, wait a minute. I don't know when the thing was put on my desk because I was not here on Thursday for floor session, but today when I went down to my desk, there was an editorial about someone being turned away from the... from a hospital. Didn't the rest of you get that on your desk?
No,
I think that picked you up.
Mr. Chair, the staff person from the former staff person from the interim committee on health care is in the room. Maybe he could give us some enlightenment.
That means you. You want to come on up?
I've been dying to get it up there.
He doesn't seem too thrilled about that. Representative Gold.
Yeah, and also after Bruce says whatever he says, if we want technical description or whatever, I guess bring in the LC person who drafted it.
Bruce, can you tell us anything about the genesis of this bill?
The bill was requested to conform state law to the provision in the Federal Medicare Act that prohibits a hospital from denying emergency services to a person based on the ability to pay. That was the request that was submitted to Legislative Council, and so I presume that that's the way the request came back, and it was on that basis that Representative Hanlon asked the committee bill to be introduced.
Does that answer your question?
It certainly does. Now we need to tell Legislative Council that we need a, language that says that instead of this.
Well, how would you suppose the language should read, Representative Ford?
Just what Bruce said.
Okay, well, we can amend it here.
Not in legalese.
Well, it can always be subject to form style. Bruce, do you want to give us that that little rendition one more time here?
Maybe Carolyn could play it back on the tape. the request was that there be in state law a provision that would parallel the federal requirement that a hospital not deny services to a person based on ability to pay. Deny emergency services to a person based on ability to pay.
Okay, and looking
at the request that went to council, and then this
okay,
is the response that they
looking at the bill. Do you have a copy of the bill in front of you, Bruce? Because I'm not sure that this bill, the way it's written, doesn't achieve that intent.
Mr. Chairman, may I?
Sure.
Now that Bruce has defined what the intent was, I can reread it and I can understand it in that way. But if without knowing that we can misinterpret it, I think there should be some clarification.
Well, how could we misinterpret it?
I just did misinterpret it.
Mr. Chair.
But so did Representative Agron.
But we are not the people that go about interpreting these things.
If the Legislative Council person could be brought in here and could respond in a manner that answers these concerns, then we've got it made.
Do you know who drafted this? Or who
I would suspect it? That it's Ms. Buffet, but I can find out real quick.
Ms. Cass.
On the
LC, it's got KS.
I think
see,
that
if, see if we can get legislative council there.
Can we play cards until they come?
Representative Bandler.
While we're doing that, something that I wondered when I read through this bill is, of course, subsection 2 is the one that holds the stick out there. It says it'll withhold apparently all payment from the hospital that's due from any person they're taking care of. And then subsection 3 says nothing in this section is intended to relieve a person of the obligation to pay for services provided by the hospital. And that's, I guess, where I have a question. What kind of assets does a person have to have or not have before they can declare bankruptcy or not pay for their services? I mean, for how long of a period would they... I mean, what really happens in the hospital to those people who come in and get assistance, I mean, get the emergency treatment, and then don't pay their bill?
I think Ed could answer that question, but my theory is you get a collection agency and you send a few letters and then you write it off. Is that,
and the rest of us pay the bill.
We just tear them.
Generally, I think that's true, Mr. Chairman. Every hospital may have a little different collection policy, and they may deviate, and some hospitals have a Hill Burton grant that they write off in the course of the year. Some do it on the first day of the fiscal year to comply with that. But there are different policies, and emergency rooms generate a lot of unpaid bills. The question that Representative Van Leeuwen raises, though, I think is very legitimate, because in reading the bill, that subsection 2 would indicate, or at least it raised a question with me, are we only talking about Title 19 patients? Because we're talking about a fairly rough penalty when we say in the bill that if a hospital violates this law, then there is a requirement that the penalty will be total withholdings of all reimbursement otherwise due from any hospital. Reimbursement due from all Department of Human Resource sources, and AFS is in Department of Human Resources. And AFS makes up from 5 to 10% of gross revenue in many hospitals in the state, in most hospitals in the state. So technically a misinterpretation by an emergency room nurse, or even maybe by a physician, as to what indeed was an emergency could cause a penalty upon the hospital that could represent millions of dollars. And I think that's rather stiff, and I doubt seriously if that's part of the Medicare contractual agreement that hospitals currently have. So, but that penalty, I think, should be looked at very closely. It's not clear in my mind whether it's strictly Title 19. It would appear that the bill addresses every patient that comes to emergency room, not just Title 19 patients.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Frank.
So does that get back then, Ed, to the person who starts using the emergency room just as my ordinary doctor, when I should have been going to a doctor during the regular hours, but I go to the emergency room just for my own convenience? Well,
Representative Frank, I'd like to draw your attention to Section 5, where it gives a definition of what services we're talking about. Medical services that are usually and customarily available must be provided immediately to sustain a person's life, prevent serious permanent disfigurement or loss or impairment of the function of the body member or organ, or to provide care for a woman in active labor. Now, I think that takes care of the concern that you have about the routine thing. Hospitals are free to refuse anybody that doesn't fall into those categories of service. I mean, we're talking about life-threatening situations where I've got a stump and you're asking me to sign an insurance form, right?
Well, apparently the bill seems to address that category of patient, Mr. Chairman, and I'm adamant that we do not deny those type of patient service anyway without signing the insurance form or determining their ability to pay.
And that's probably true, so that the bill and Section 2 with withholding payment or reimbursement wouldn't have any effect, because you guys don't turn us away anyway, right?
The potential threat is there.
Mr. Chair, I have another question on what you just read.
Okay.
While we're waiting.
Kathleen's here.
What is active labor?
Never having experienced it, you might be in a better position than I to.
Well, I have a problem with that being included. I have no problem with it being included that a woman that is going to deliver imminently should be allowed to do so in a facility instead of outside of it. My problem is that active labor, does that start with the first pain? And most doctors tell you, you don't go to the hospital until the pains are so many minutes apart. You don't want to go and sit there and use the hospital room all day long.
I think that language would be interpreted in line with all of the other specifics they give there about the immediacy of the impact. I mean, if we're talking about a false labor or, a few pains, I think that the hospital would be free to turn that person away. That would be my understanding of the language. Do you disagree with that, Ed?
Well, I think that's one of those gray areas where that's a judgment call, and if a physician, regardless of the specialty, deemed that it was an emergent situation based on that definition, there's a lot of room for misinterpretation, and the penalties are substantial.
What you're concerned about is a woman comes in, the doctor diagnoses, says, well, the kid's not going to be here for another couple of weeks. She walks out in the parking lot and gives birth. That's what we're talking about.
Yes. With birth. There is recourse, and it's practiced fairly widely through the court system for misdiagnosis and those types of things. That's stiff enough, but at least it has a judicial process where guilt has to be proven. And I'm afraid that these types of administrative judgments could end up as serious threats to many institutions, because those things do happen accidentally, not deliberately.
Right. But you would agree, Ed, that as a matter of good public policy, we ought to have a bill that says it ought to be the policy of hospitals not to turn away people in these dire emergency situations.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would not agree to that, simply because I do not think a bill is necessary for those policies to be mandated. I think all hospitals in the state have their own policies, and that is their policy. So I don't particularly agree that we need a bill to do that,
right?
Except for the problems it creates. let me make one more point, Mr. Chairman, and addresses that very question that you just tried to put me on the spot with. One of the major issues that concerns me about this bill is, why just hospitals? Why are hospitals being singled out in the bill, not other providers? Other providers are subject to Medicare payments, are subject to AFS payments for treatment of their clients. I mean, why not doctors listed in the bill with just as severe a penalty? Why not ambulance services with just as severe a penalty? And certainly they deal with more emergent cases in many cases than many of our emergency rooms.
Is an immediate care facility a hospital?
Yeah.
We've got immediate care facilities, as Representative Ford mentioned. Pharmacists, dentists even deal with emergency situations. Right. There are a number of nurse practitioners in the state that maybe not routinely, but do have to deal with that because of a clinic setting.
But Ed, where do people go when they get their arm cut off? They don't get driven to, a nurse practitioner. They go to a hospital. That's what the little signs out there for the highway are. So, we can all get to those hospitals
not
quickly.
Not Fredonia.
Isn't that where the vast majority of people
absolutely
in those emergency
and
situations?
And we're pleased and proud to do that without legislation, I might add.
Representative, hello.
There's a very, very tiny error on line 15. It surely got to say as used in this section or as used in section 1, I assume is what it means.
Yes, it should say this section.
I assume, well, does it mean in this section, or does it refer back to emergency medical services in section one?
Okay. As used in section one.
Well, the bill only has one section, so section one would refer to the entire bill.
Right. I was looking at subsections when I said that.
Or subsection, unless you mean subsection.
That's what I meant to say. It needs to, it's a very tiny error, but it's an error.
I think it should read this section then, because of the context that it would find itself in.
Well, but
Kathleen just
subsection one is the one that really has the crux of the deal in it, so I assume it means subsection one.
You could say subsection one. I don't think it made a difference. Kathleen?
Yeah. Let's. Hi, Kathleen.
I think it's.
We need your expertise again. I'd like to know if you can answer the question, first of all, what is active labor? In the bill on line 18.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Kathleen Beaufay, Office of the Legislative Council, that language is copied. So I'm going to have to fall back on the source from which it is copied.